It's time to hear from the Green Party.
Oh, good morning, Steve Abel from the Green Party. How are you?
G'day, mate. How are you? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you okay. I'll turn you up on the desk there. And now this morning, we're hoping to cover off the Fast Track Approvals Bill and also the changes to the RMA. But you've got some fresh news out of Parliament last night. Run us through it.
Yeah, so last night we were debating in what's called the Committee of the Whole, one of the freshwater reform bills, which is the government's so-called cutting of red tape strategy. It's this kind of omnibus apocalypse, if you like. It's these key bits of regulation that are seen as a barrier to farming and mining. So it's put through the Primary Production Select Committee, even though it's about affecting the Resource Management Act, which is our environmental legislation. It gets rid of protections for wetlands explicitly to facilitate coal mining. It gets rid of the protections around winter grazing, the low slope rules and the setback rules to allow, you know, we've seen this horrific winter down in Southland with tens of thousands of animals dying in a really terrible cold, wet winter, spring rather, and a lot of what's going on down there is intensive winter grazing, mud farming, cows up to their udders in mud, and so they're just pushing through getting rid of the protections that were put in place to reduce the harm that mud farming caused. They also got rid of Te Mana o Te Wai, which is the hierarchy of obligations around freshwater protection, which says that we need to first prioritise the health of water bodies, rivers and stuff, second prioritise safe drinking water for humans, and thirdly consider industrial uses for water such as for irrigation. So it's about setting out a hierarchy of obligations, Te Mana o Te Wai, really revolutionary framework for ensuring we have, you know, clean rivers and safe drinking water. And they've just got rid of that hierarchy of obligations so that once again industrial uses of water will be able to essentially harm the reliability of safe drinking water, which is what we saw, what we've seen across the Boundary Plains in the Southland.
My understanding was they have real trouble with safe drinking water down in the South Island because of farming runoff. Is that correct?
Yeah, basically over the last 30 years we've had this huge increase in the number of dairy cows down there. The main source of nitrate leachate in our whole agricultural system is actually dairy cow urine. That's where most of the nitrate comes from. But, you know, we've had a sevenfold increase in the use of synthetic nitrogen fertilizer since 1990. So we were the biggest increase of synthetic fertilizer use in the whole OECD and Aotearoa New Zealand. It's driven the dairy intensity. That means loads of nutrients going down into the catchment, and it has to go somewhere. All that fertilizer, all that urine, which is rich in nitrogen, soaks down into the aquifer. So in Canterbury and Southland, we see, you know, rising levels of nitrate contamination in drinking water,
which is carcinogenic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's linked to bowel cancer, also linked to preterm birth in pregnant people. So, you know, nitrate is something you don't want in your drinking water, and in that part of the country are dependent on groundwater for their drinking water.
Oh man! So this is passed in Parliament, or is it just a reading?
The third reading is actually today. So it's gone through the first two readings in the Committee of the Whole and Select Committee, and then out of the hat they drew this retrospective amendment that would stop effectively the Otago Council from rolling out their freshwater farm plan, which is designed, you know, the rules for how farms need to manage freshwater protection. So Otago has it all ready to go, and we're due to meet today to put that into place. And so
the government's stopping them, which
effectively by putting in a retrospective clause that this legislation won't pass until it gets the royal assent sometime later this week or next week.
Yeah.
This clause will mean that freshwater farm plans that come out after yesterday will be retrospectively affected by this legislation.
Oh,
so they're effectively stopping Otago from doing what it's been working on for a very long time. So this is a really classic example of where this government is totally intervening and getting in the way of local councils doing their job, and basically running a sort of, you know, command control type arrangement where they tell local councils what to do. The most egregious example was Shane Jones's extension of 1,200 marine farm permits automatically throughout the whole country. So, and this is the classic that is managed in the commons by local and regional councils in close relationship with local iwi and local people, and that was just completely overridden by this government. This is another example of that.
Oh, man. Oh. Now, there's a couple of other stories that have been... Obviously, the Fast Track Approvals Bill has been top of the news cycle for a wee while. The Fast Track Independent Advisory Group has been put together, and as it's panned out, most members have been put forward by ministers and political parties, not government agencies. Given that most members of the advisory group are nominated by ministers and political parties, how do you think this affects the independence of the advisory group's recommendations?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the definition of cronyism, isn't it? It's that we get told, oh, it'll be independent, there'll be this panel that'll evaluate all these things. And then it turns out that, in fact, I think only two of the appointments had come from the advisors.
So token.
Officials.
So yeah. Token.
And the rest were kind of the dream list of politicians. And so that's exactly where you're into really challenging territory.
I mean, what are the political consequences of not having members with strong environmental conservation backgrounds in the advisory group?
Well, I mean, I would say the environmental consequences are going to be negative. And so the thing about the environment is that in the grand sense, it's a commons, right? No one owns the rivers, the oceans, the atmosphere. They are things that we manage for the health of not just ourselves, but for the whole ecology on which we depend, the biodiversity of the earth, the living system that we're a part of. If we don't have an ability to recognise what underlies our well-being and our thriving, which is a healthy environment, then it's just going to get compromised and compromised and compromised. And what we have with the existential challenge of climate change is an inability to go, hang on a minute, we have to think about what makes the earth livable and viable, not just for us, but for the other species. And that means we need to stop pouring pollution into it. Now, if you just say development at all costs, i.e. anything that makes a buck, we don't care if it's coal mining or Aussie gold mining or, you know, building a road through a rainforest, or it might be a housing project, it might be a positive thing, then you've got no ability to evaluate which things also tick the box of being really good for the climate and also good for the environment and also good for social well-being, all these other things that we should be taking into account.
Now, I mean, how do you interpret Minister Chris Bishop's assertion that this selection process was completely insulated from ministers, given the evidence presented? And what message do you believe this fast-track selection process sends about the government's priorities, particularly regarding environment protection and community engagement?
I mean, this is a radically anti-environmental government. Like, it's... when people talk about we haven't seen this level of sort of centralised overstep in terms of local decision making, but also overriding of environmental laws. I mean, typically the Fast Track explicitly excludes a whole tranche of environmental laws that they're not actually considered. So, and so its intention is to override those environment laws, which are seen in really simplistic terms as a barrier to the sort of development that they want to happen. And so, you know, it's as bad as it was back in the days of Muldoon, you know, with the Think Big scheme. Now, to be clear, there is problems with, you know, the time it takes to get things consented, the one-stop shop element of it, where you go, you know, someone wants to do something, go to one place to get all the things addressed, might be quite a useful way to do it, to speed things up. But a lot of what they say are the barriers to getting things done is actually to do with, for example, in the renewable energy space, it's to do with the generator retailers actually not wanting to build
to invest
new
yeah.
wind, even though they've got consented wind farms, they haven't built them because it's in their interest for there to be a scarcity of supply, because that's how they can make more money out of burning coal and gas. So there's a bunch of myths around what their objective is, but the effect is like an everything soup of we're going to do all the things. We're going to have deep sea mining, and we're going to have more wind farms, and we're going to have coal mining, and we're going to have more housing developments. The problem with that is that it doesn't hold our nation on a trajectory towards better environmental well-being, towards, you know, less climate emissions, better social outcomes. It's just we're going to do whatever anyone wants to have a crack at to make a buck.
Yeah,
it's so short-termist,
yep.
And it can't end well.
Yes. Now, the RMA is also up for some changes. The idea of changing the RMA seems like it's had a bit of bipartisan support. Political parties have agreed that in its current form it's failed to protect the environment enough. And at the same time, it has wrapped projects up in excessive red tape. What's happening to the RMA and what's proposed, Steve?
Yeah, so, it's worth reminding people that, in fact, the last government, the Labor government, got rid of the RMA and replaced it with the Natural and Built Environments Act. So,
yeah.
Across the House, it's been recognised that the Resource Management Act is a bit, has some challenges in it. It came into force in 1991. It was quite revolutionary at the time.
Mm.
We've now seen that there are some problems with how it operates. So a lot of work went into coming up with the National Built Environment Act. Unfortunately, I think what this government is going to do is they have an attitude that the environment is a barrier to making a buck.
Mm.
And, essentially the ability of corporations to exploit the environment. So they want to get it out of the way. So they refer, as they did to this legislation yesterday, as cutting red tape, getting rid of the burden of environmental protection, essentially. So I think nothing good can come of what this government's reform of the RMA will look like, because they will also talk about centering it around property rights, private property rights. That's the sort of narrative you hear from this government, which is deeply disturbing, because if we go back to the principle of environmental laws about protecting the commons, the stuff that doesn't really belong to anybody, but in fact belongs to all of us and is a necessity for all of us, that's what the environment is. So making it centred around private property rights is disastrous.
Wow. Now, one last question for you, Steve, just on the RMA. What specific measures would you like to see included in any new legislation to ensure New Zealand meets sustainability and environmental goals?
Yeah, I kind of am at a point in years of kind of campaigning and working on this stuff that you actually need quite kind of direct, intentional laws rather than just sending signals to the market. I think we've got far too locked into this idea of managing the environment through pricing and so forth. The emissions trading scheme being the classic example for the climate. In fact, we need to just say, listen, we're going to phase out the burning of coal for electricity generation, perhaps for dehydration of milk powder.
Mm.
We're going to phase it out by 2025, set a date. And after then, you won't be able to burn coal to dehydrate milk powder.
Yes.
You have to do something else.
Yep.
And so that's the sort of very simple, direct regulations that I think are actually much easier to deal with, both for industry, but also to ensure that we know what our pathway is to achieving the outcomes we want, which is a decarbonised society, moving our energy system to renewable energy, which is abundant in New Zealand. We have wind, we have sun, we have, rain. And geothermal. And so just making those specific intentional steps rather than these kind of complex messages to the market that you hope will sort it out. Because you can't trust the market.
Can't rely on the free market, can you, obviously?
The market is what has harmed the environment so terribly.
Mm.
And so we have to understand that the motive of making money just doesn't tend people towards looking after the commons.
Hey, Steve Abel from the Green Party, thank you so much for chatting to us this morning. We'll look forward to speaking with you in a couple of weeks' time.
Awesome, mate. Thank
Cheers,
you.
Mate.
That was the Green Party.
The Wire.
Radio Bang!